that after the, being only with the women for 7 years, some of the guys became, wanted to be squaws. They didn't want to go out and be warriors. And so then they, it was all right, and they became squaw men, and they stayed and did everything that the squaw did. And it was in their culture and everything happened. We may thank the, and then he says, and Locke wanted children to have leaky shoes and no turn for poetry. Now, why Locke would, you know, okay, shoes that leak, I suppose to remind them of their mortality or something, and no turn for poetry. And then they give the quote on there. I will also advise his feet should be washed every day in cold water and have his shoes so thin that they might leak and let in water whenever he comes near it.
So he doesn't walk in water.
If he have a poetic vein, it is to me the strangest thing in the world that the father should desire or suffer it to be cherished or improved. Methinks the parent should labor to have it stifled and suppressed as much as may be. Yet Locke is one of the most sensible writers on education. But each of the guys has a little twist that comes from their own mood and occasion and the vagaries of their own age, you know, see? And so, if there is not a margin of error in effectiveness of the education, you know, you could really have a risk that the value of the education would be really screwed up. And that somehow you have to keep some margin of error in the giving of the education. You allow error, greater margin of error in your methods and so forth, so that you don't get this, you know, weird twist. We may well thank the obstinacy, beneficent obstinacy, lovely line, beneficent obstinacy. Nice, sort of a juxtaposition of incongruous words. Beneficent obstinacy of real mothers, real nurses, and above all, real children, for preserving the human race in such sanity as it still possesses. But the man molders of the new age will be armed with powers of an omnicompetent state and an irresistible scientific technique. No margin of error in the education method. We shall get at last a race of conditioners who can really cut out all posterity in the shape that they please. Now the second difference of where does he say the first difference? Okay. We look forward to a situation which is novel in two respects, and then he gives the first one, and now here the second. The second difference is even more important. In the older systems, both the kind of man the teachers wished to produce and their motives for producing him were prescribed by the Tao, a norm to which the teachers themselves were subject and from which they claimed no liberty to depart. That's that whole sense of we're under the same sword, the same requirement. And how important that is. They did not cut men to some pattern that they had chosen. They handed on what they had received. They initiated the young neophyte into the mystery of humanity. They initiated the young into the world which they lived in. The mystery of humanity which overarched him and them alike. That sense of the Tao is over both of us. You know, overarched both of us. It was but old birds teaching young birds to fly. This will be changed. Values are now mere natural phenomena. Judgments of value are to be produced in the pupil as part of the conditioning. Whatever Tao there will be the product, not the motive of education. Now, what is that? My mind goes, I don't quite grasp that yet, so I'm assuming that maybe you don't either.
You're saying before we taught in order to share what we know, in order to share the Tao and to show people it, and that's the motive for learning. And you're trying to produce the values. Can you teach from there?
You mean like that the Tao is tells me to educate the child in accordance with the Tao.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tao itself tells me to educate the child in accordance to the Tao, and that's what the motive is. The Tao provides the motive, or is the motive, that sense of, that, you know.
I think by living in the Tao, you are motivated to teach others the Tao.
Yeah, you are, but I'm trying to see exactly that connection of motivation. I'm wondering, is it that where the person, the father in the Tao, says, we do this, that sense of telling what the human being is like, is that that the Tao...
When you know that there's, that you have to learn to be human, when you're from within the Tao, and you know that you have to learn to be human, then you know you have to teach that. That's your motive.
Okay.
Because they have to learn that.
Mm-hmm. What it is to be human. What it is for us to be human.
Yeah.
It's the same.
But when you're when you're outside the Tao, then you have an arbitrary, supposedly arbitrary system of values, which you're trying to feed into somebody.
Yeah.
And make them accept.
Okay. The Tao is why we teach, and in this new age, it will be what we teach.
Yeah. And if you're trying to produce the Tao, then instead of
parts,
then you have to have taken parts of it, and you can't be. You would have to decide what.
Yeah. You take your pick. Pick and choose.
Are to be used,
right.
And if you're inside of it and that's your motive, then you haven't decided what the ends are.
Mm-hmm.
in that you could write
yeah.
them down.
Yeah.
But you know that this is
yeah.
it guides you through your whole
yeah.
guides your way.
Yeah.
It's helping the kid recognize how to live or to be human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like discovering what it is that it is something to be
mm-hmm.
human versus teaching them to do this, or versus just throwing stuff at
mm-hmm.
them that have no relevance really or meaning, but saying that it does.
And as long as the Tao would be the motive, then as long as the Tao would be the motive, there would be some ambiguity. But if the Tao is parts of the Tao are what is produced, there will be no ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
There will be no side by side and limiting. It'll be just, you will have four precepts of the Tao ingrained in you.
And deciding the ends instead of
yeah.
worrying about the means. Instead of the means will automatically produce the ends, you're deciding what the ends are.
Yeah, okay, you're using parts of the Tao as the end point rather than the starting
mm-hmm.
starting point for both of you.
And if
you're taking certain things to make them the end. Is that
that's
what you're saying?
Good. Like modern
yeah.
mind will teach the ends
mm-hmm.
instead of teaching the means.
If you taught the means, because you don't really know what the ends are, so then you're it just sort of guides you to it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of
deciding. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, we're fleshing that out, I think, that line out. I don't feel like I'm comfortable in saying that I've hit bottom yet on it. But I think that we've gotten a lot of what he meant. Is there somebody else that said, was
it? Would it make a difference if you're starting, if the Tao is the motive, then the part of the end is becoming, is learning to be human. Like Chris said, and if you already assume you're human and go from there, then that makes certain things within the Tao the end, I guess. Does it make a difference if you start assuming you're human or moving towards becoming human?
You mean like if you don't recognize that you need to learn to be human?
Yeah, if you're starting from that position, then that's not your motive anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Become.
Yeah, okay, that relates, because the conditioner would be taking, you know, will assume that you are human and then want to give you certain characteristics or certain attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tao assumes you're not human in one and the need, because we're not under the Tao in terms of harmonious with it, it becomes the need, the motive for educating one in accordance with the Tao. I think that sense of our not being in harmony with it. We're in the Tao, we're not in harmony with it. Then that need to be in harmony with it, accepted from some of the precepts of the Tao, are the motivation, the need. Yeah, and then the conditioner comes and dominates the Tao, takes bits and pieces and teaches them. In other words, the conditioners are going to simplify human conscience. Okay? They're going to take certain ones and they're going to say, this is what the human conscience should be like. And just tack that down completely. Okay. Okay. I just still don't think we're down to the nitty gritty. But then again, we might not be able to come up with a better verbal equivalence than what he has done. But we're at least plumbing those a little bit. The conditioners have been emancipated from all that. There's one part more part of nature which they have conquered. The ultimate springs of human action are no longer for them something given. It's the function of the conditioners to control the ultimate springs of human action.
Not to obey them.
The ultimate springs of human action are those oughts of the Tao, without which you cannot do the tell somebody that he ought lead a person to a certain action. Okay, you should do this. Proposition of policy. He's going to no longer obey the oughts, but to control the oughts, and control those oughts in the other people, giving them just some of them. They will know how to produce conscience, and decide what kind of conscience they will produce. That's the clincher there. Produce conscience. And it will always be a simplification. And the conditioners, they will be outside, above. They will be assuming the last stage of man's struggle with nature. The final victory has been won. Human nature has been conquered, and of course has conquered in whatever sense the words may now bear. The conditioners then are to choose what kind of artificial Tao, not the real whole thing, that just gets us down on our knees, but an artificial Tao, and they will, for their own good reasons, produce this Tao in the human race. For their own purposes, they'll say certain things are necessary. You ought to yield all to for your country, okay? And they will get that across. And they will get probably responsibility to yield all to the country across. Get a very heightened sense of that kind of service, and then to where if you don't yield all, you're in terrible guilt. But they won't show certain responsibilities to kin, to family, to justice, to responsibility. They won't mention those things. But in the child, in the kitten, during the first 7 years or whatever, they will only allow the child to see those certain parts of the Tao. Okay? All that relate maybe to giving up everything for your country. That's all. That's the only line on the side of the kitten cage that they'll allow that kid to see. Okay? That's the only obligation that they'll allow that kid to see. So that after 7, that's what he sees. The only thing he sees is the necessity to be obedient to one precept or about 3 precepts. Okay? And if he isn't, when all the guilt is linked on one precept, it's almost like having an electrode in your brain going off, because if you aren't doing that, we feel guilty in lots of different ways in the Tao, don't we? Feel ashamed in lots of different ways, but when there's one, all that guilt is going to be would be focused, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that almost be like I've never thought of this before, but wouldn't that be like almost a shock? You'd give yourself a shock treatment because all your guilt that is spread out all over all the principles of the Tao is focused on one. And if you don't do what the Big Brother says, you almost put yourself in hell. It's a negative, and in terms of behavioral conditioning, that would be if you limit the number of things that you could be guilty about not doing, you provide an intense negative reinforcement to do the thing that the country wants. I think that would happen. Because it's sort of funny, this sort of anxiety, the guilt anxiety in the Tao, but you know, knowing that we're off a lot, somehow keeps us from maybe being destroyed. Destroyed by guilt. I've never thought of that.
Because we're not off, because we're often duty to our parents as well as duty to our kids.
Yeah.
We blow it both. We're not just off of duty to our parents.
Yeah. And there's an odd sort of stability. Oh, like if something is pulling me this way and something is pulling me this way, I have more stability. Yeah. You know? Too.
Tightrope kind of.
And it doesn't feel that good, but there is more stability there. More coherence there than if there was one, you know, one pull, you know, that just would yank me in that direction, one demand that I had to meet. And then if I ever resisted that, it would just be, you know, it would be like defecating on God, you know, somehow. Be that hard to do. And I've never thought of that. Now that seems to make sense. Okay. But now this is the irony, this, you know, thing here. But how are they going to be motivated themselves? For a time, perhaps, by survivals within their own minds of the old natural Tao. I mean, just carryover survivals of it. Because they're not interested that much in being rational, and so that they aren't going to be wiping out parts of the Tao that just happen to, by nature, be in them. They too, maybe, for a while, will be better than their principles, which are none. I want to, and therefore I go out and do. Thus, at first, they may look upon themselves as servants and guardians of humanity, and conceive that they have a duty to do it good. But it is only by confusion they can remain in this state. I don't know if Lewis understands how... I'm sure he does understand, but he's not talking about this in terms of people can stay in a state of that confusion like this for a long, long time. Because if they're not in the whole Tao, there's not really that much reason to get outside of that confusion, to clarify. They recognize the concept of duty as the result of certain processes which they can now control. Their victory has consisted precisely in emerging from the state in which they were acted upon by those processes to the state in which they use them as tools. It is absurd, then, down bottom of the paragraph, it is absurd to fix on one of the things they are comparing and make it a standard of comparison. Wait a second. Okay, they know... Okay, he just checks them out in their logic here, and they know quite well how to produce a dozen different conceptions of what is good in us. And the question is, if any... The question is which, if any, they should produce. Which of those conceptions of good should they produce? No conception of good can help them decide. It's absurd to fix on one of the things they are comparing and make it a standard of comparison. I'm not quite sure... They follow that particular thing.
Can you go over
genuine or artificial? Well, I don't know how much I want to. And the reason is a difficulty here that I see, and I haven't quite articulated to my own satisfaction. But one thing that Lewis is saying about these people is that you know that big if I said before? If they are logical, they cannot hold this position. Remember, pages and pages and pages ago. They don't really care.
too. The conditioners don't really care.
Don't really care, and I think that about not mint is there are fewer people that really care whether they're logical really or not than Lewis, I think, sees. You know, it's we it's a difference in the last 30 years, isn't it? A change. Do you really want to have logical opinions? You feel a real necessity to have, you know, when you want to do something, to have a logical case for it? I think we've been kind of the way we've sort of raised that that isn't that important, whether we have a logical case. We go sort of by our intuitions, you know, our instincts, our you know, we make an assumption that we have moved a long way from the feeling that man is by nature bad, in a long way into feeling man is by nature good, and so no real sweat. I mean, one of the things about the demand that we have a logical position for something is the realization that we go wrong real easy. And so we have to think about this case quite a bit. But I think we make the assumption that we're essentially good folks. We don't have a kind of a twist at the center of our being. We are in sort of a liberal, what's called liberal, view of ourselves. That man is really by nature good, and if we get clean up the environment and clean up the society and so forth, we'll be all right. Whereas the older view, the Augustinian view, is that man has got a twist inside. Man has got a twist inside. That it's going to pull everything to him, you know. And he is not going to be, if you get up, get his environment nice, he's not going to be an altruistic person. And I think the liberal assumption is that if we clean up some of the real injustices in society, everybody is going to be fine. And we're closer to that than we used to be at Lewis. And Lewis is a medievalist. And so although he lived, you know, he was in this early 20th century, he very much was thinking that it would be very painful not to have a logical argument for what you were doing. See? We really, you want to. I don't think we care that much about it. I mean, how many people really care to read a 70-page argument anyway? Come on, get it over. Tell me what you want to say and I got it. Okay, got it. You know, but really, to read a 70-page statement like this, not many people really want to. Just going to sell on the book stands? You know? It isn't. We don't really care. We can be bothered by things a great deal, but we really don't think. It doesn't really occur to us that sitting down and thinking about it for 20 or 10 hours is really going to do us any good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, say, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, certainly in Lewis's group of people, if you had a problem, you'd sit down and work it out, and then you'd go find somebody who knew a lot, you know, who more than you did, and you banged heads to get some clear vision about what you were doing. Whereas we'll tend more naturally just to leave it be. Something bothered as well. Yeah. We just keep going about our business. So I think there's a problem here. This is the sort of the first place it pops up. Because he's talking about, now it's absurd to fix on, he's showing how the guy can't do it logically, right? I don't think that's, I think it's important for you to read that over. I don't think it's important right now to take that much time in this session to do it, because that's going to come up again shortly, anyway. And where it will be more clear to say that maybe what is even scarier than Lewis says, they really don't care to be logical.
And now, he never addresses that question, does he?
What? Well, he sort of assumed it at the beginning. I want to do, see? In the modern mind thing, when he says, I don't care if it isn't valuable what I do, I want to do it, so I'll do it. But now he's coming back to this, you cannot logically do this, and showing. And he's showing to me that, but he's not really going to be showing to the conditioner, because the conditioner says, I don't care. But it is important that I follow that argument, but let's not take the time now.
Okay.
And then he says, to some it will appear that I'm inventing a factitious difficulty for my conditioners, a not natural or genuine difficulty, but an artificial difficulty. Other more simple-minded critics may say, why should you suppose they will be such bad men? But I am, and he says that if you don't, if you think that people in that with that much power are going to be good guys, you are simple-minded. But I am not supposing them to be bad men. They are rather not men at all. They're not men at all. They are, if you like, men who have sacrificed their own share in traditional humanity, in the Tao, in order to devote themselves to the task of deciding what humanity shall henceforth mean. Now this is what's involved when you're involved in you know, wholesale behavioral conditioning. You've got to decide what humanity shall henceforth mean. Now, henceforth from the last 10,000 years. See? Where humanity has meant roughly the same thing. And now there's that change. Good and bad applied to these men are words without content, for it is from them that the content of these words is henceforth to be derived. They are going to say what good and bad is from now on. And then he says, it isn't an artificial difficulty. We might suppose it was possible to say, after all, most of us want more or less the same things, food and drink and sexual intercourse, amusement, art, science, and the longest possible life for individuals and for the species. Let them say simply, this is what we happen to like, and go on to condition men in the way most likely to produce it. Where's the trouble? But this will not answer. In the first place, it's false that we all really like the same thing. We don't all really like the same thing. But even if we did, what motive is to impel the conditioners to scorn delights and live laborious days in order that we and posterity may have what we like? Their duty? But that is only the Tao, which they may decide to impose on us. But that is only the Tao which they may decide to impose on us, but which cannot be valid for them. If they accept it, then they are no longer the makers of conscience, but still its subjects, and their final conquest over nature has not really happened. And I think the problem there is that the conditioners have not really thought of this difficulty, and they take what they're doing on faith. You know, they're not thinking of the logical absurdities that involved in what they're doing. They're just moving right along. And he shows that then he evaluates their thinking process, and I don't know how much thinking they're really doing. They are not men at all, on 77. They are not men at all. Stepping outside the Tao, they have stepped into the void. Stepping outside the Tao, they have stepped into the void. Nor are their subjects necessarily unhappy men. The irony. They are not men at all. They are artifacts. Something made by man. Man's final conquest is proved to be the abolition of man. And that is the big kick. Now one thing, too, is to flash this over. We're not saying, I will never be a conditioner. But he does say what happens to a person when he jumps outside the Tao. Doesn't he? He says, they are not men at all. Stepping outside the Tao, they have stepped into the void. And that is something Lewis is saying. You jump outside the Tao, you cease for the time that you're outside the Tao to be a human being. You're Homo sapiens still, but you're not a human being. So that's that thing that came from the first chapter. He is saying that. And then the irony that those men are not necessarily unhappy men. They're not men at all. That's the point. They were artifacts, art objects in human flesh made by men. Artifacts. Okay? And that's the difference. Because if there's some margin of error in my education, there's a good deal of where I'm making myself. And that kind of place the universe is, and the kind of thing people really are, is, and I'm shaping, I'm doing some shaping of myself, and nature is doing some shaping, God's doing some shaping, whether, you know, if you believe, but it's a long process. Here these guys make the artifact in 7 years, they stop the person's being on the edge of evolution, on the cutting edge of evolution. They stop that process that we read from Becker, remember? They cut that short, and there's no change. It's an artifact. Whereas a human being is continually growing and involved in a metamorphosis that continues. It says, yet the conditioners will act. When I said that all motives fail them, I should have said that all motives except one, all motives that claim any validity other than, now this is then, he gets back to that, this is really what they feel, all motives that claim any validity other than that of their felt emotional weight at the given moment have failed them. Everything except the sic volo sic jubeo, which is thus I will, thus I command, has been explained away. But what never claimed objectivity cannot be destroyed by subjectivism. Now, I don't know. The impulse to scratch when I itch, or to pull to pieces when I am inquisitive, is immune from the solvent which is fatal to my justice, or honor, or care to posterity. You want to talk about that a little?
I don't understand what the motive is.
The motive, where is that?
Because all motives that claim invalidity have failed in everything except thus. Thus I will, thus I command.
Well, the conditioners have explained away all value, but all validity, they've explained away all validity except the fact that one does feel the impulse to do something. And then I will and I command. It's whatever occurs to me, then do it. But the other thoughts have no validity. I think that's what he means there, isn't he? All the only motives they have left after having wiped out all value and so forth in the Tao as being under them, over them, the only reason they have for doing something is what they want to do, the emotional weight. There's no measure of what is right to do. The only thing they have left is that emotional weight. Now that's, you know, not much to go by. That's not much to measure what's right. Yet, you sit there and you see that's the situation the conditioners are in. How many hours of my day do I function that way? What I want, you know, what I should do is whatever is to, I want to do most at that particular time. I do what the impulse, what is it? What's this phrase? The felt emotional weight at a given moment. You know, and that's what I should do. But we naturally, in a sense, live that way. In much of our days, don't we, or not? Is that just me?
Not me.
You know, but that's the validity. There's nothing else. There's no should outside of that. I feel like doing it, therefore I do it. What I will to do, you know, I do. And there's in assuming that that's right somehow. Now, that's a way of being, you know, without having thought through the instinct argument, we act as if we already have settled that question, you know, right? We don't have that argument that the instinct innovator makes, but we function this way a great deal of the time. What I want to do, therefore I do. And we're at the mercy of the impulse. The impulse to scratch when I itch or to pull to pieces when I'm inquisitive is immune from the solvent, which is fatal to my justice. Now, what does that mean? All the arguments that have seen through justice as implying any should or value, we've already seen through all those things. But those arguments that we have seen through all that with don't see through the itch. Desire to itch. You can't, you know, you see through everything, but then you're left with I got this impulse. And you can't see through the impulse. All value is gone and you're left with the itch. Or the inquisitiveness. And then you say, well, that's what I feel and that's what I do. And that the word solvent means all these arguments that have blown value apart. Solvent, you know what solvent is? Cuts grease, Detergent cuts grease, solvent cuts oil and tar and all that. What has wiped out the Tao can't wipe out the itch. Desire to itch, because there's no, it's irrational. Remember? That impulse is completely irrational. When all it says it is good has been debunked, what I say, what says I want remains. It cannot be exploded or seen through because it never had any pretensions. Can't see through it because it never claimed to be anything else. It's just, that's it. It's fact, kind of thing. Yeah.
You said that what destroyed the Tao can't destroy the one. Is it the Tao that really gets destroyed, or the our awareness?
Well, the argument, you know, we can go about doing what he did, the G&T did in the first chapter. We can go about debunking, okay? And debunk justice and debunk all the precepts of the Tao and say, oh, there's no is credential for that. Ought, and so therefore, with reason, we wipe out value. We use reason to destroy reason. Okay. We use proof to show that proof is, you know, nothing. We get rid of the mind as having any say, and we're left with the body, just the impulse. And you can't argue that you don't feel. You know, it's not valuable. It's just there. Not valuable in itself, and eventually, yeah, I suppose a person could say, what we intend to do, we value our impulse, don't we? Yeah. In a sense, it's valuable because I have it, and because I have it, I should do it. I should go about and meet that need. We tend to function that way when we're not thinking very clearly about what we should or should not do,
okay,
which is a great deal of the time.
If they mean that the Tao will be destroyed, but that no one will be standing under it, right? But didn't the Tao still give it? You said that the solvent destroys the justice, manner, and posterity, and you lump that all together and said the solvent destroys the Tao, but our want will never be destroyed. But that the Tao doesn't really get destroyed, does it?
We say that there's, you know, the argument that says I should live in the Tao is gone. We wipe out that, we eradicate that. Any reason to to be subject to the Tao is wiped out by these arguments that G&T have done and so forth. We see through it. See, that's what this last guy is doing. He's seeing through it, the whole thing. I don't care if it isn't valuable. It's just a phenomenon. It's just a phenomenon like all others. And so he's seen through, in a sense, the Tao. And the thing that is interesting is Lewis says you can do it. You can see through the Tao. The Tao isn't the last thing to see. You can see through the Tao. See through all the reasons and to be in it. You don't have an argument, see, supporting your acceptance for the Tao. There isn't really a solid argument to support that. That's the 50-50 evidence business, you know? It's got to be the heart that gets you to accept it. You don't have the case. They've seen this, that there isn't a case to support their being under the Tao. They haven't seen that there isn't a case not to, but, you know, it's solid either, but they've seen through any supposed case that someone would ask them to. Well, what they're doing, in a crazy way, is this sense of, okay, there's 50-50 evidence, and it's up to my heart and to accept the Tao, and I don't, okay? Well, it can be, you know, it can be, but they say, they realize, oh, gotta make a leap of faith? I don't want to leap there. I want to leap here. You know? and it's left up to them. And then they end up in that with their itch.
But the Tao is still there. This is what it is.
The Tao is still there.
Yeah, we can't destroy the Tao.
You can't destroy it. It's still there. I mean, in the sense that but they see what they can do is if they're effective with everybody in producing an artificial Tao, when they die, it's over.
Well, no.
Hmm?
No.
Now, this is something that's scarier than Lewis is saying. He doesn't question a minute how effective this is. You see, he doesn't question a minute how effective this is. You won't buy that.
That's extending it too far.
Well,
that's assuming the Tao has no life of its own or no penetrating voice, or it doesn't actually.
Somebody else might, but the
actually move individuals.
The Tao doesn't say there's no power. Paul will say it. The Tao by itself. There's no enabling power in the Tao itself, you know.
Well, yeah, but I don't know.
You know.
I don't think I wouldn't say that that once if they get everybody to be on their artificial Tao and then they die, that we'll never get back to the Tao. I don't think that's true, because I think if anything it would come up again, because they would die, so the artificial Tao would die with them also, and we might have to start again like Aborigines, but I think we'd come back to it.
Okay, when the conditioning quit, I think what, you know, when we say that there are natural, remember that question about there being natural archetypal, natural symbols, that are almost like it's ingrained in us?
Yeah.
And that we take our leadings, there are really forms then that we like better than others. They have meaningful natural symbols and so forth. And we naturally relate certain things to other things. If the conditioners died out and the conditioned were no longer conditioned, I think that's what you're talking about, would then their children be able to piece together, come to the Tao again, just by watching the way, the kind of world the universe is, the kind of place the universe is, and the kind of people we are, with being able to see everything that's really out there. The people who are conditioned, though, can't see. It's like those kittens.
Yeah, well, something we have to
see.
Break through the condition.
But in their genes, you know, their children have the potential to see.
Yeah.
They no longer have the potential to see things that's been trained out of them. Now, there is a question in Brave New World, they have a character who escaped some of this, Huxley's Brave New World, where they got everybody trained, but this one guy just didn't quite, they didn't quite do the number on him. Maybe the plug came out during a storm or something, and or the conditioning process broke down at some time, but he didn't go along. He said, wait a minute, this isn't right, there's something else. But he didn't know how to deal with it. That's an interesting book to read after this. But the point here is that they're left with just the impulse of, and let's see, left with just the impulse. Go to 79, if you would. And then he says, the irony is that the conditioners will hate the condition, though regarding as an illusion the artificial conscience which they produce in their subjects, they will yet perceive that it creates in us an illusion of meaning for our lives which compares favorably with the futility of their own. And they will envy us as eunuchs envy men. In our conditioners. It's just chance. There is nothing but the chance of their impulse, their good impulse. They don't have any grounds to make the conditioned people happy. You know, there are no grounds for that argument to make the conditioned people happy. So if they happen to, it's only chance that will cause them to create happy conditioned people. But if they did create happy conditioned people, they would hate them. because these people living in an illusion would be far happier than they were. And the thing is that you change the Tao, and that's all you get. If you condition the person with certain aspects of the Tao, country, everything for country and so forth, and that's all that they have, that guy who's conditioned, no longer a man, but an artifact, lives in his own mind a meaningful life. Within his head, his life will be meaningful, because all meaning will be wrapped up in his relationship to doing things for the country's sake. And it's so painful for him to do anything else that he's locked in, and everything is meaningful. He will be, in a sense, in the clean, well-lit cell of one idea.
That's kind of what they did in the South with the blacks as slaves. And one of the reasons they opposed any education at all is that their condition from like birth, the kids, that the one meaning was to serve the master.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were happy.
After the Civil War, the guys didn't want to go.
Yeah.
You know, because, and I can see lots of reasons, economic reasons and responsibility reasons, you know. When the freedom comes, I don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go find something to eat, you know. See? So there were a lot of folks that didn't want to go, and a lot of those that went were really busted.
But we started conditioning.
And then he goes through the logic of the position. Now this, by the logic of their position, they must just take their impulses as they come from chance. And chance here means nature. Now, the problem is, he's showing another point, and so it really isn't a problem that Lewis is having, but they don't demand that their position be logical. They really aren't going to demand that their position be logical. But the interesting thing that Lewis wants to show is that if when there is no value, or when chance is what is going to control what they make of us, chance means nature. It's going to be just their impulse, and so nature is the one that is pulling all the strings. See? That's his beautiful point, and I think when I...
Here, near the end, the original tape becomes faulty. And so, session 5 concludes at this point.